Monday, November 27th, there is an interesting show on the National Geographic Channel. It's called Is It Real? Ancient Astronauts. And the show features a very interesting person. In fact, it features quite a few people, but our guest is one of the people featured on the show. And Giorgio, how are you?
Very well. Thanks, Jerry, for having me on.
There's a lot of things I want to talk to you about, and I'm sure we'll get a chance to cover most of it during the interview. You're on the line with us from Southern California. And tell me a little bit about this TV show.
Well, a couple of months ago, well, a little bit longer than that, the National Geographic Channel contacted my office and asked a whole bunch of questions about the ancient astronaut theory, because I'm the director of research of the Center for Ancient Astronaut Research here in San Diego County. And essentially, we're the only research organization in the world that publishes a magazine called Legendary Times, and that journal is exclusively dedicated to the ancient astronaut theory. And a lot of your listeners might know the name of my boss, and he's a gentleman by the name of Arie von Daniken.
Now, he's going to be on the TV show too, right?
Exactly, along with Zechariah Sitchin, Eric von Daniken, and me, and then they are also interviewing a critic of the ancient astronaut theory. And, right now I have no clue which way this program will go, but I've been given assurances that it will be unbiased.
We're certainly going to be unbiased tonight, and we're going to give you a chance to talk to us in great detail about the thesis behind this show, and a few other things I want to get to first, like the Legendary Times. You sent us some copies here at the office. Interesting. How long has this been going on?
The first issue was published in 1999. Eric von Daniken and I, we co-founded the research organization back in 1998, and the premier issue did appear in 1998, but then 99 was the first year where we published six full issues, and
so it's a bi-monthly still yet?
Not anymore. It is now a quarterly.
Okay, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, bi-monthly was just a bit too much work, especially since we all held down regular jobs.
Oh, I understand. In fact, I made a commitment. I thought it'd be pretty easy to write 1,500 words for UFO magazine every month. But guess what? The deadline comes, and I'm staring at the blank page every month.
Yes, I hear that. I know exactly what you mean. And, so we started out slow, and what we pride ourselves in, all the articles that are written in Legendary Times, anybody can go out there and feel and touch and look at these artifacts themselves. None of the stuff that we have in there is made up. I mean, of course, it is the ancient astronaut interpretation. If we look at certain aspects of holy scriptures or ancient monuments and so on and so forth, but everything we write is not mere fantasy. We actually have ironclad sources. We ourselves go on expeditions to touch these things, to photograph them, to measure them. To if we can verify the origins of these things that we write about. And we also don't publish or don't put those articles in the web. I mean, it's exclusively in the pages of Legendary Times.
And they can, of course, we have a link over there to a website that you're connected with that I believe you can subscribe to Legendary Times.
Oh, yeah, exactly. It's legendarytimes.com, and it gives a secure link to order the subscription, and four 60-page issues per year is $40.
Now, you talked about expeditions. When are you going on another one? Have you got one planned?
There's always an expedition that's planned. However, it always depends on time and the financials, which ones we'll pick up next. I mean, the last one was we went to ancient Egypt. Well, not to ancient Egypt, but to Egypt to look at the mysteries of ancient Egypt. And It was very, very exciting. And
what do you make of the pyramids and the Giza pyramid in particular?
Well, there I have to tell people right from the get-go that, you know, whenever people that are not familiar with the ancient astronaut theory, they immediately say, oh, so are you those crackpots that say that the pyramids were built by aliens? And my answer to that is absolutely not, because the ancient histories and the documents and the ancient mythologies, especially of Egypt, talk about these teachers from the sky, the guardians of heaven. And according to their ancient texts, it says that the human beings built the pyramids along with the help of the gods. And when I say gods, by the way, it's always lowercase g. It has nothing to do with the god. It's nothing to do with spirituality. We're talking ancient astronauts. We're flesh and blood space travelers that visited this Earth in the remote past.
How did you get interested in this subject?
That's a very good question. Originally I grew up in Switzerland, and Eric von Daniken is he's Swiss. So growing up, I had the privilege to travel with my parents all around the world, and also sometimes with my grandma, and she'd always, you know, mention Eric von Daniken's theories, and she was actually the first person to expose me to the ancient astronaut theory. And as I, you know, got older, I got more and more interested and started to go to a few lectures by Eric von Daniken, and was immediately, you know, hooked. And over time, he started to recognize my face, and so we got to talking. And long story short, when I, back in 98, when it became clear that the former Ancient Astronaut Society was going to cease operation, Eric von Daniken said, you know, we really need something in the English-speaking world. Would you be interested? And I said, absolutely. The rest, as they say, is history.
Now, tell me a little about the Center for Ancient Astronaut Research. Where is it?
It's in San Diego County, in North County. And we have a gigantic library of over 3,500 books that are related to or are direct ancient astronaut titles. I mean, it's the largest library of its kind in regards to ancient astronauts. Of course, there's bigger libraries out there, but if it has to do with ancient astronauts or anything related to the field, we most certainly have it. And also, this is the place where, you know, we do the research and where we put together the latest issues of Legendary Times. And by the way, if there's subscribers listening to Legendary Times, don't worry, the next issue is coming. We're working on that.
Now, when you talk about the ancient gods, and you talk about all of this, the ancient astronaut theory or thesis or fact or whatever, how we want to phrase it, are we talking about things that are referred to in the Old Testament of the Bible?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, the definition of the ancient astronaut theory is basically we'd like to determine whether or not extraterrestrials have visited Earth in the remote past. And the Bible, the Old Testament, is filled with angels and God and weird machines or objects flying around, the glory of the Lord, which is described as by Ezekiel, a wheel within a wheel, and so on and so forth. Now, back then, mankind, people were not dumb. They were not stupid. However, the main thread that you know, goes through the entire ancient astronaut theory is basically a term called misunderstood technology. If we look at most of these ancient texts with a modern perspective, those descriptions are highly technical in nature. And just because the people back then didn't they simply didn't have the frame of reference that we have today. So a being that was able to float around with, let's say, a rocket pack became an angel, because that was more or less something very magical that the people back then, who were technologically primitive, not mentally, they were just technologically primitive, so they couldn't explain what they saw, and so they spun this extraterrestrial visit that happened on multiple occasions in the remote past. That turned into religion, it turned into false worship, it basically, if I may say so, that was the beginning of the mess that we're in today. Let's put it that way.
Well, I agree with you. I'm inclined to accept what you say, simply because it does appear that if I were back in those times and didn't have the technology we had today, I might describe those things the same way.
Absolutely, and you know, you have so many references that describe strange objects. Like you have, you know, a stone that would glow, and the stone would speak to you. I mean, what better description if you don't have the words than to describe a computer screen? A computer screen, if you don't know the words, it looks like a stone. You know, and it has a glowing front, and it sometimes speaks to you if you listen to internet radio. So it's the same thing that our listeners are now listening to.
Well, yeah, I've often thought that perhaps this technology we're using with the internet and broadcasting probably is extraterrestrial in its origin.
Oh, that is, of course, always a speculation has been around for a long time, how, you know, all of a sudden, you know, ever since the Industrial Revolution, the leaps and bounds that we've made in technology, especially after 1946, 1947, are astounding, downright. So, you know, why all of a sudden this quantum leap and everything? And so it's most certainly interesting. By the way, just so people understand what exactly I'm referring to, you know, with ancient visitations, imagine 500 years from now, when mankind eventually will travel in, you know, outer space and explore, as they say, strange new worlds, discover, you know, new life forms, and so on and so forth. If we arrive at a planet that hosts intelligent life, what will we do? Will we just stand back and watch these people or these beings from afar? And my answer is absolutely not. Especially if they're, you know, technologically speaking primitive, we'll give them a gentle push in the right direction. And the question we ask is essentially, well, if 500 years down the road or 1,000 years down the road, if we will do this we human beings will do this on a different planet, why couldn't this have happened here on Earth 10,000 years ago?
It could have. It's a pretty simple answer. You've traveled hundreds of thousands of miles looking for artifacts and relics and evidence. Can you kind of flesh out for me something that really stands out in your mind, a great find, something that...
Yeah, I mean, there's most definitely, there's all the ancient monuments, and, you know, this can start from Peru to Egypt to Bolivia, or even in India. I mean, India still today is such a treasure trove of ancient astronaut goodies that you can barely, you know, walk in India and not see some type of a reference to ancient astronauts. And that is, you know, if you go to a to any hotel here in our Western world, then in your nightstand you have a copy of the Holy Bible. However, if you go to India, you don't have that Holy Bible in your nightstand. You might have some other holy books in India, and that is the Ramayana and the Bhagavad Gita and the Vedas and all those books. And if you read those with an open mind, I mean, they truly read like science fiction stories or Star Wars with, you know, references to flying machines that the ancient Indian gods used. They were called vimanas. And you have detailed descriptions of what these vimanas were able to do. I mean, and they are referred to as flying machines, chariots of the gods that were piloted by Indra and all the different gods. And these gigantic battles, for example, the Indian epic, the Mahabharata, describes these epic battles that took place in amongst these gigantic cities that once were orbiting the Earth and that were destroyed with weapons of mass destruction and really crazy stuff, even references what you could conceivably say are references to, nuclear weapons. I mean, really crazy stuff. And just, you know, I mean, the word vimana, if you ask some person from India today, you know, how do you say airplane in Hindi, they'll tell you it's viman. So right there you have, you know, a word that survived for thousands of years that still essentially means the same thing as it did thousands of years ago.
It seems to me that a lot of this history in the Bible, and as you mentioned in India and in other cultures and their religious books, there's a lot of violence. Is that something we have to look forward to even today, I wonder?
Well, I mean, we don't have to look forward to it. It's happening all around us. It's happening. It's been happening all around us for centuries.
Oh, I understand what we're doing to each other, but I was thinking in terms of these intergalactic battles, interstellar battles.
Oh, okay. Well,
any evidence that things like that might still be going on?
Well, I mean,
It's probably off your topic a little bit, but I'm just curious.
It's sort of there. I mean, I really believe that, you know, good and evil permeates the entire universe. So it would be kind of a pink worldview to think that, you know, if we ever, you know, go out there and make contact, or if they come here and make contact, that it's all benevolent. I mean, it'll go both ways. There's good species out there and there's bad species out there, because according to the ancient texts, the big picture that is drawn is that there were battles and there were mutinies and we were sort of in the middle of all this.
In fact, it almost appears that mankind were pawns of some sort.
Well, I mean, and still today, I mean, with everything that goes on in politics and with Sikh societies and all this, mankind, we are nothing else but pieces on a gigantic chess piece, and only a few people are actually playing the game. And the moment that you understand that concept, or you're okay with that, then, you know, there's really nothing, everything is fine. But as long as you try to, you know, to fight everything with such a fervor, there's certain things that just can't be changed. And so does it have to do with ancient intervention with extraterrestrials, what's going on today? Absolutely. I mean, even our beginnings of mankind is that one of the basic tenets of the ancient astronaut theory is that the extraterrestrials performed a genetic mutation, a targeted genetic mutation of our genes. So something, our DNA was tampered with millions of years ago.
And so we, for lack of a better term, are hybrids?
Yeah, absolutely. Everybody, we're all hybrids. And the thing is that we are living in highly exciting times right now, because there isn't a day when you don't read something in the paper or on the internet about, you know, this new field of genetics. And people say that the geneticists are on the verge of solving all the mysteries, but I've talked to many, many geneticists, you know, after lectures over a beer and a glass of wine at somewhere at a bar off the record, where they tell me the mysteries aren't stopping at all. In fact, the mysteries are just beginning. They're even greater now than they ever were, because, you know, we're being told that the human genome, basically, you could conceivably create a human being by only using 10 to 12% of the human genome. 12% of all the DNA material you carry in your cells is enough to recreate you, Jerry, as a whole. Okay, and geneticists today say that the other 88% or 90% is what they call genetic junk. And right there, we have a problem, because just because we don't understand what that quote-unquote junk is, doesn't mean it's junk. DNA is one of the best message storage devices that we could ever think of. You could hide encyclopedias in there. So maybe we are now finally on the right track, that scientists will find the answer to our cosmic origins, not in the archaeological sites, but within our genes.
It's an interesting world, no doubt about it, Giorgio. And you've been at this for some time now. And if you think back, when you first started into this for seriousness, you know, for real, first you were interested, and then you got more interested, and then you really made it your vocation, I guess, even though you have another job, you said.
Well, that was a year ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, basically, what I'm asking you is, have your ideas changed? I'm sure they have. A little bit, at least.
Well, I mean, let's put it this way. In my ideas haven't changed. My convictions have only become stronger as every day goes by. It's as if I'm working on this, you know, gigantic puzzle, and the more pieces you fit into the puzzle, even though it's not complete, you can see the picture. And so, most certainly.
So basically, you're about filling in the gaps.
Yes, exactly. And you know, and by the way, you know, there are days and there are times, and even, for example, the last issue of Legendary Times, where we will look critically at some sorts of you know, quote unquote pieces of evidence that, you know, the UFO field or the ancient astronaut field has held dear for the last 20 years, and I have no problem to expose a piece of evidence as a hoax if it turns out to be a hoax. I'm right there with the scientists to say, look, this is wrong if it's really wrong, because if somebody says, well, no, you're wrong, and we have, for example, Egyptologists working with us, and they say, because specific piece of evidence I'm referring to is in Egypt. There is at the Hathor Temple a world famous lintel stone, a relief of a couple of hieroglyphs that look like a tank, a helicopter, and a jet plane, or some say a UFO. And for the longest time, that has been passed around as the piece of evidence. However, we've been approached by a bona fide Egyptologist who is, by the way, a subscriber to Legendary Times and a longtime member and a longtime friend, and has been reading Eric von Däniken's book since he was 16 years old, and said, you know, this, you know, something else happened here. And basically, what happened is that you have two inscriptions superimposed of one another, thus creating the appearance of a helicopter and a tank and a UFO. And you know, we have a 6-page article about this in Legendary Times, where, you know, this claim is substantiated, it is backed up. And if I then have people come up to me, or I get phone calls where people are extremely upset that I've done this, then you know what? I'm not sorry, because I am first and foremost a truth seeker, and I will not perpetrate a lie. And one of those things turned out to be a false piece of evidence. So out with that stuff. But this has only strengthened my conviction that we're on the right path.
Ancient astronauts. And our guest is Giorgio Tsoukalos. This Monday night on television, the ancient astronauts will be part of the Is It Real series on National Geographic. Giorgio told me before we started the program that he expects lots of debunking on the show. In fact, he asked the crew when they filmed his interview if he could record the interview on his own tape recorder. When you watch it Monday night, be looking for that tape recorder sitting on Giorgio's desk. It will be interesting to see how the edit job compares with the real tape that Giorgio made. Giorgio, we still have another half hour to go as we continue to explore the subject of ancient astronauts and your quarterly magazine, Legendary Times. So don't go away, folks. Lots of interesting things coming up. We'll be right back. The biggest secret ever is about to be revealed. Fast Walkers, UFO and Alien Disclosure.
Words you were never meant to hear.
It's clear we're dealing with a cosmic Watergate.
This is the biggest secret in the history of the human race, the known modern history of government.
Photos you were never meant to see. Video you never knew existed. People you were never meant to meet.
As Jack Nicholson would say, you can't handle the truth.
Essentially everything that you would want to know has been covered up.
Things you were never meant to know about.
No one has produced a higher quality, better produced DVD. Anytime. Anywhere. Fast Walkers, now available on DVD for only $19.95 at ShopJerryPippin.com. Hello, everyone. This is Jerry Pippin, and welcome back to our show. Our guest is Giorgio Tsoukalos, and he's on the line from San Diego. Well, this Monday night, November 27th, he'll be part of a show that will be presented on the National Geographic Channel. It's called Is It Real? Ancient Astronauts. How many times will this TV series run? I know it starts on November 27th on the National Geographic Channel, but they usually repeat those several times at least.
Yeah, I would presume so, yeah. So check your local listing.
Yeah, now when... And the reason I say that is this interview will be up for a while, and a lot of people are probably saying, gee, I missed it, and they may not have. They need to check the TV schedule. And this is a production that you really didn't have much input in it other than just being in it, right? They did some research with you, but, I mean, it's not your production.
No, it is National Geographic's production, of course, and the Is It Real name, that is the name of an actual series. So they have a whole bunch of episodes with the question, you know, is it real? And then, you know, this one is about ancient astronauts, and they covered a whole bunch of other topics. However, all I know is that, you know, they came here for a four-hour interview with me, and then they... flew to Switzerland to do a five-hour interview, I think, with Eric von Daniken, and then they also flew to New York City to speak to with Zachariah Sitchin. So you got three stalwarts in the ancient astronaut field being interviewed for this program, and I know that of one critic of the ancient astronaut theory. So it's 3-1, but you know, you never know how they'll dice and splice it, but you know what?
You just mentioned a critic, and a little earlier we used the word debunker, which we use in the UFO field a lot. What do these debunkers say about you? Are they saying you don't find the artifacts, or are you just saying you got it all wrong, or what?
This is the funny part about the debunkers, and that is, unfortunately, the debunkers don't really, they've never read any of Eric von Däniken's books, or they've never read any of the other researchers' books that are in the international field, and what they do is they simply regurgitate the rubbish that other debunkers have published over the past 20 years. One big example, Cherry, is the mystery of the Nazca lines in Peru. And there, the debunkers are the ones that say, oh, this is where the ancient astronaut theory says that, you know, this is a big, gigantic spaceport. It's an E.T. Alien airport, and that's where the E.T.s landed and had their base. Well, Jerry, nothing could be further from the truth, and I've put out a challenge to any debunker out there, and I say to them, look, you show me the paragraph or even the reference where Eric von Däniken or anybody that's representing the classic ancient astronaut theory represents that says Nazca, the Nazca plane, was an E.T. spaceport. We never said such a thing. What we said, and this cannot be argued with, is that seen from the air, Nazca looks like an airport. And it really does. Because it has lines and runway-looking bands and geometric figures. So it truly looks like an airport, but we never said it was one. I mean, the mystery still stands. I mean,
you talk about these ancient mysteries, and that's exactly what they are. So it's, have you unlocked any of the mysteries? Have you gotten to a definite conclusion on anything? Or is it still kind of iffy?
That is what we're all looking for.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing if,
Well, you're talking in the whole, and I'm talking about the parts. I mean,
obviously, I wish I would walk into a cave somewhere, you know, and stumble across some piece of technology. Maybe a thing that's still humming or something like this, you know. But unfortunately, that has not yet happened. But, you know, that is what keeps me going. I'm looking for the one piece.
You know, you talk to the rest of the people in your field, and you keep up with it because of the quarterly magazine. When we talk about this whole scene or period or idea, I guess, or concept, What is it that you really find most interesting at all? To me, the interesting part seems to be the biblical people writing about the chariots of the gods, so to speak, and the ships, and you mentioned Ezekiel, and a few other things. What gets your attention about all of this? There must be something that really jumps out. I know it all is interesting to you, or you wouldn't be doing it.
Sure. No, most certainly I have to say that it is, most of the time, it's the ancient megalithic sites where conventional archaeology tells us, you know, we built all this stuff when we walked out of a cave. And I have talked to engineers, to architects, and they're smart people. They're very highly intelligent. And if they tell me, you know, Giorgio, you got me stumped here. I don't know how anybody could have done that without any cranes and with any advanced technology, and some feats of construction, such as building the Great Pyramid of Giza. We couldn't do it today. Let's put it that way. And
so really, the pyramids probably have the most charm to you.
Yes and no. I mean, of course, the pyramids are exciting, but you know, everybody and their grandmother talks about their pyramids and has been there. Now, the one place that really is absolutely off the charts is a little-known place called Puma Punku, and it is...
Say that again, Giorgio. I love it.
And Puma Punku... And
where is that?
That's in Bolivia, and it's right on the border off Peru in the highland of the Andes, right next to Lake Titicaca, the highest navigable lake in the world. And Puma Punku is situated about 100 yards away from a world famous site called Tiwanaku. And every day you have buses upon buses where people, tourists arrive, and they're being disgorged from the buses right there. They huff and puff because it's really high up in altitude. They huff and puff to see the ruins. They take a couple of pictures, and they listen to some guy tell them all sorts of fairy tales, and then they huff and puff back to the bus and go back to their hotel. Now, granted, Tiwanaku is a beautiful sight. It's artistically speaking, it is spectacular. However, only 100 yards away, you find Puma Punku, and what you see there, architectural-wise, is absolutely stunning. You have these gigantic stone slabs that weigh up to 900 metric tons each, that have at one point, you have six of those pieces, that at one point were all in one piece, held together by some clamp-like devices. You have perfect stones that fit together like Legos, and you have, you know, very technological looking pieces of rock that were cut as if by a laser or by a cheese knife almost, because when you touch these stones, they have not been chiseled, they've just been cut, because the surface is so smooth, it's equivalent of touching a mirror. And what's highly exciting is the fact that, you know, that the stone used there ranges from andesite to diorite, and the only stone that's harder than andesite and diorite is diamonds. So, you know, the whole story that we're being told today, that, oh, no, all this was done with chicken bones and with obsidian, is completely absurd. I mean, it is crazy. You know, and of course, in the textbooks, you can read pages upon pages, chapter upon chapter about Tiwanaku, yet you barely find a paragraph about Puma Punku, because today's archaeologists simply have no clue what it was for. And according to, you know, the conventional archaeology, allegedly it's the Aymara Indians, the natives that are inhabiting that area, that built Puma Punku. Now, you can go, when you visit Puma Punku, you can ask the heirs of the Aymara that still live there today, who built this? Did you build it? No, they'll say to you, and then you ask, well, who did? And you know what they'll do, Jerry?
What?
Point to the sky and say, los dioses, the gods. And they also tell you, and of course today the whole place is in complete and utter ruins, but they'll say to you, even when our people came upon these places here, Puma Punku was already in ruins. And so I'm saying that if you have native people who are very diligent about their oral traditions, if they tell you, we didn't build this, it was the gods.
It was the gods.
We should start listening a little bit.
Yeah, you got, and of course the term, the gods, means ancient astronauts in your vernacular, I imagine.
Exactly, because like I said before, whenever I speak about gods, by all means, please, I mean gods, you know, with a lowercase g. They were flesh and blood space travelers, and,
It seems to me a lot of these things, the pyramids, what you were just talking about in South America, Stonehenge, you go on any of these places, seems to be, these things are built with symbolism in mind.
Oh, thank you so much, Jerry. Absolutely. I mean, did you know, you just mentioned Stonehenge, that if you And nobody talks about this. See, everybody always talks when they talk about Stonehenge, you know, that it's a calendar. It signifies, you know, spring and winter and the solstices and so on and so forth. But, you know, that is such a simple explanation. It really doesn't make any sense because, quite honestly, you could have just put in a couple of sticks in the ground and you would have the same effect. But yet they chose to build this gigantic monument, and it was a couple of dozen years ago when this Russian astronomer determined beyond a shadow of a doubt that Stonehenge, among other things, is a model of our solar system. It gives you the orbits the orbits of our planets with the exact distances from one planet to the other, including Pluto. And of course, Pluto has now been demoted, but you know.
But it was there at Stonehenge anyway.
Exactly. And so here the critics are clamoring again. Oh, coincidence, you know, whatever. Like I said, coincidence. But fly around halfway the planet and you'll arrive in, outside of Mexico City is a place called Teotihuacan. And Teotihuacan it's a magnificent site that has a whole bunch of pyramids lined up on the Avenida de los Muertos, the Avenue of the Dead. And it is an incredible architectural feat, much younger, of course, than Stonehenge, but still majestic nonetheless. Now, right there, we have, again, mathematical proof that every pyramid that is built on that Avenida de los Muertos is representative of one of our planets in the solar system, including Pluto. So, coincidence, Jerry? I don't think so.
what?
Many things like this.
Why do you think the ancient astronauts stopped? In other words, they're not building things now. Or are they?
Well,
Or have we found something fairly recent?
I think that, you know, in the ancient astronaut view, essentially what happened is that they gave us, you know, the push in the right direction. We've been given the tools to you know, do good with who we are, and I mean, look, over the centuries, over the thousands of years, up until today, November 16th, we most certainly, the visitations never stopped, okay? I mean, we're constantly being visited.
Well, yeah, we do UFO sightings reports every week, and they're all over the place.
Exactly. So, you know, I just think that, you know, our zeitgeist or our frame of reference has simply changed. That we don't need quote-unquote ancient astronauts anymore because we are no longer, you know, primitive, technologically speaking. I mean, we were never dumb or stupid. We just, our frame of reference has changed. So, you know, and like I said before, I firmly hold the viewpoint that there is multiple species out there, so that you know.
So basically, you're saying that, Giorgio, and I didn't mean to interrupt you, but you're saying maybe the Egyptian things and the South American things and the things in Europe and England may be similar, but they may be from different species, different astronauts, different times, different places,
different times of visitation. I mean, I, of course, cannot tell you, you know, it was on, you know, March 26th that this landing happened.
Well, I wish you could. We could make some news.
Believe me, I would be on CNN if I could.
Instead, you have to settle for the Jerry Pippen Show. I'm sorry. No, I'm kidding you.
However, there is a date that I can give you. And, you know, the interesting thing is that, you know, right now everybody is going, especially the New Age field and the UFO field, everybody is just simply going crazy with the advent of, you know, the year 2012, and that is the end of the world, and the apocalypse is here, and the end of days, and judgment day, and one negative thing after the other. And I have to say to that, rubbish. Why is it not? Why are these people only holding on to negativity? Why can't it be a spiritual awakening, something positive, that in 2012 mankind will awaken to, you know, a new type of thinking, a new type of respect for one another? Or the other option is contact, 2012, because it is on the ancient calendar. Multiple ancient calendars that end in 2012, but what nobody talks about, Jerry, is the fact, or is the question. By the way, so if the calendar ends in 2012, when did it start? And I have an answer for you. The answer is that the calendar started on August 11th, 3114.
Really?
Yes.
Why do you say that?
Oh, because that is what the scientists for the calendars, that's what they've determined. I mean, all the Mayan scholars and the Aztec scholars.
Yeah. Flesh it out for me. What happened that day in August? I mean,
we all know, according to the official story or the Orthodox society, we all know that the Mayan, the Aztecs, most certainly did not exist in 3114 B.C.
Now let me understand this. August 11th, 3000, how many years ago?
3114 B.C.
The day the gods arrived.
Yep.
And why do you say that?
Because there are many ancient texts that refer to such occurrences a long, long time ago, and they were not always called gods, but also the guardians of the sky, or the teachers from heaven, and they were always described in the same way, that the, you know, quote unquote, the heavens opened, and the teachers from the sky descended to teach mankind in various disciplines, such as agriculture, mathematics, astronomy, architecture, and or engineering. And if you, what's highly interesting is that the further you go back in time, if you look at architectural or engineering feats, the further you go back in time, the more perfect the monuments are. And in many cases, whatever followed later was just, and I'm going to get in trouble for this, was just rubbish. I mean, you had the older.
It should be getting better and better.
You know, here we are. All of a sudden, we're building pyramids, and then the next thing that we did was crap.
Well, I think a phrase that maybe is just a knockoff. It didn't quite not quite as perfect.
You know, and it will be the same thing. It will be the same thing. The allegory I always like to present at this juncture is, look, it will be the same thing if Henry Ford's first car would have been the Ford Taurus instead of the Model T. And it wasn't. You had the Model T first, and years later, you had the Ford Taurus. Back then, it was just the complete reversal of this.
And that's because the gods left?
Yep. Exactly. Exactly.
They said, okay, fellas, you're on your own, and we screwed it up.
Yes, we have. Yes, we have, especially if you listen to the news, the non-corporate news,
Well, I'm in complete agreement with you on all of that. No doubt about it. What kind of world 5,000 plus years ago when they came, and that sunny day in August, and what kind of world was it? Were we all just in caves? Agrarian society, I guess.
No, we were most certainly not in caves, but, you know.
I guess we did raise things, you know, to eat and.
The Babylonians and the Sumerians, they were already, you know, thriving back then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, and of course, the 3114 BC date, you know, is merely just one date of such a visitation. And like I said before, I truly think that there was multiple of these visitations. And then you also have stories about these gods of these space travelers interbreeding with human women because they thought they were fair and gorgeous.
Yeah, I
don't blame them.
I don't either. I still agree. that part of the Bible has always interested me, and I've often wondered if other holy writings of the time or geological writings have similar things.
Oh, absolutely, Jerry. I mean, you have, you know, see, here's the thing. You have certain books in the Bible, but then what nobody or a lot of people are not taught, in, especially in Bible school, because it's sort of a dirty little secret, is that the Bible used to be, number one, it used to be way thicker. It used to have so many more books, and then at the Council of Nicaea, certain books were considered too dangerous, and so they were banned from the Bible. And those books are called the Apocrypha, the secret books of the Bible. And you have, you know, the Apocalypse of Abraham. You have the Apocalypse of Baruch. You have the Book of Enoch, which is also very important. And in there, you have thousands, literally, of references of these fallen angels. And by the way, again, when I speak about a fallen angel, it's not some being with wings. It was an extraterrestrial flesh and blood.
Those stories kind of remind me, and I hope our Navy veterans will forgive me, but it's kind of like a sailor who's been on the ship for a long time going to shore.
Yeah, exactly. We're all human. We have to understand that we're all human.
And basically what you're saying, as far as you can learn, most of the ancient astronauts had these human tendencies.
Of course.
If not all of them.
Or we have extraterrestrial tendencies. You can spin this both ways. You see, and the critics always say, oh, well, does this mean that you're not a religious person and that your God is extraterrestrial and you believe in extraterrestrials? And I say, you're correct in one thing. I am not a religious person. I despise and I call for the abolition of all organized religion. Organized religion is nothing but the evil cause of everything that happens today.
Well, if you look at today's news headlines, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I am not a religious person. However, a religious person doesn't mean anything. What means anything is if you're a spiritual person. If you believe that there is a higher cause, something greater in the universe, and absolutely the creation, the spirit of creation, the universe, the whole it, the capital IT, that is God. But I do not believe in extraterrestrials in a worshiping way. That's absolutely ludicrous. I mean, it has nothing to do with religious belief or anything else or that... You know, that this is a cult because, Jerry, have you ever remarked that, you know, the moment that, you know, you say that you're into UFOs or ancient astronauts, they say to you, oh, you're in a cult. You know, all you have to do is go to church on a Sunday and watch what's going on. That is prime cult behavior. Everybody flocking to one place to worship and to bow down. That's cult behavior. But, you know, because it is what everybody does, you know, people like us, who have a different viewpoint, we're the ones that are, you know, the ones with the cultish behavior.
But basically, take it there is some sort of force of good and a force of evil that's we can't put our hands on.
And that force of good or evil, that is within each one of us.
Yeah, I started to say even that's probably relative. I don't want to get into a philosophical thing here. We're almost out of time here. The TV show, once again, will be on the National Geographic Channel. It's a special, and it's part of a series, because Is It Real? And they're talking about ancient astronauts this time, on November 27th. And you believe it certainly is?
Most certainly. That it has no... With me personally, Jerry, it has nothing to do with belief anymore. I know it's true.
You think they're coming back in 2012, or?
Well, the extraterrestrials, if you look at all the ancient stories, all the ancient documents, the scriptures, everything that we have, there is this promise of return. So it'll happen. If it's 2012 or not, I'm not sure.
With that, we'll let it go for right now. We'll be checking back with you again. Once again, is your center there in Southern California in San Diego County, is it open to the public?
Yes, it is. And, of course, we prefer catering to members of the Center for Ancient Astronaut Research. And the way you can get a membership is by subscribing to Legendary Times, which can easily be done and securely at legendarytimes.com. And also, if anybody is interested in reading books about all these topics, we also have a online bookstore, and that can be found at legendarytimesbooks.com. And
have you written books about this subject?
I am currently in the finishing stages of writing the first book.
Well, then when you get it done and get it published, come back.
Absolutely. It was such a pleasure to be on the show. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. It's been an interesting discussion, to say the least, and I think you have a good explanation for a lot of things. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The program is Monday night, November 27th, Ancient Astronauts. It's part of the Is It For Real series on the National Geographic Channel. The time on Monday night, 8 o'clock Eastern and also Pacific. By the way, we have several shows on this topic coming up over the next few weeks. So keep checking back here on our website for new programming. Speaking of programs, this program was edited by Jane Swartley. This is Jerry Pippin. Thank you for listening. Until next time, cheers.
Have a problem with mold or mildew in your home? Well, listen to this. We have found a product you will love. Moldzyme, an effective non-toxic mold and mildew cleaner. Moldzyme is the cleaner, greener way to remove mold and mildew stains. This is a line of completely non-hazardous, non-toxic, and environmentally safe products that gets rid of mold and mildew stains quickly, easily, and safely. Moldzyme contains no chlorine or ammonia, is non-hazardous and hypoallergenic, safe on wood, concrete, and brick, inside or outside your home. Moldzyme eliminates odors and is fragrance-free, an all-natural and environmentally safe way to remove mold and mildew stains that really work. See the complete line of products by clicking on one of the Moldzyme banners located throughout our website. You'll be glad you did.